It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello, welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show, and today we are at King of Pro Wrestling in Ryogoku Sumo Hall in Tokyo, Japan, in front of 9,152 people to look at King of Pro Wrestling. And to join me in this remarkable endeavor is Mr. Marcus Green. How are you, sir?
Good. Glad to be back. Another due effort to knock out one of these great shows.
Indeed. You may have noticed that I didn't say of Total Wrestling. Neither of us are a Total Wrestling anymore. It's a long story, but we'll leave it there. basically, there won't be one for a while. It's on a bit of a sabbatical, so we currently are not of Total Wrestling. But go read the old stuff, because there's loads of cool stuff available to you through their podcast page and their Twitter stuff. You should be able to find some bits and pieces around somewhere. Anyway, the show opened with Suzuki-Gun, El Desperado, Yoshinobu Kanemura, and they defeated Jushin Thunder Liger in 9 minutes 51 seconds for a title match, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match. This started the show hot and heavy. This was ideal place to put it. It was like the old days where they used to put the Junior Heavyweight title up first. I thoroughly enjoyed this. This was a rollicking affair. Bit of an old school babyfaces and heels tag match. What are your thoughts on this, Marcus?
Oh, same as yours. Fun opener. Great stuff. Opening with Junior is always a smart idea. Get the crowd, get that adrenaline going early to set the pace for the rest of the show. You know, I've been surprised but thoroughly enjoyed seeing Liger and Mask on what seems like a winning streak, because I'm not really used to that.
Yeah.
I'm used to them opening the show but not necessarily getting a win. So seeing them get to this point was fun. But obviously, Desperado and Kanemaru have, been the champs. Well, they've set the record, right?
Yeah. They are the longest reigning champs now of all time in the junior heavyweight division, certainly. They've only defended it about twice, though.
Yeah, I was about to say, why they've not set any record by any means for a number of defenses.
Which in Japan is the thing that matters, to be fair. Days of ownership of the belt don't really matter. It's how many defenses you have.
Exactly, and you know what you did in those defenses. So yeah, they definitely proved why they're the champs in this match. But fun affair on both sides.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of furthers the story, gave Kanemaru and Desperado something to do. And the next challenges, I guess, are going to be back to Rapingi 3K and anyone else. But we've got the Best of Super Juniors Tag League coming up as an annual event. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I don't think we're going to give it full G1 coverage, but we will be looking at the final at Power Struggle. So we'll see what happens there. Moving on next, we had a tag team match kind of gearing up for the other tag team tournament, the G1 Climax Tag League, in December. And that featured Great Bash Heel, and Great Bash Heel, Togi Makabe and Tomoyaki Honma. They defeated Juice Robinson and Tower Henare in 10 minutes and 20 seconds. A thoroughly good match. Kind of puts Juice on the back front, but he didn't take the pinfall. Toa Henry is still showing signs of growth this year, but he's kind of getting a bit samey. He needs to kind of gun things along a little bit to get some traction. And Makabe and Honma on their winning ways and maybe proving to be a good showing for the tag league this year. What did you think of this one, Marcus?
Yeah, again, more the same. You know, Makabe and Honma, two guys got a lot of respect for, but not always over the moon about seeing them do their thing. Primarily, a lot of that came off of because they used to rack up a lot of L's too. So
yeah.
another team that's really coming along and seeing they're really, you know, gotten in sync, which is fun to watch. As far as Robinson and Henry, you know, obviously, like you said, he's coming along, but he's still got a long way to go. And Juice, man, he's just, he's still in the hole. You know, obviously, he didn't take the pin in this match, but you can see he very much got frustrated.
Yeah.
So he's starting to get into that vein, and getting to the point where he's gonna have to go back to the drawing board. But another fun tag match here.
Of course, Juicer's regular partner is David Finlay, who wasn't on this card, which of course may be telling because they're more than likely to tag in tag league. It'd be interesting to see if they have a decent run in tag league or even end up winning it, because they'd be a nice surprise underdog story for Wrestle Kingdom, I think. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. The next matchup was an 8-man tag team match. Bad Luck Fale, Taiji Ishimori, Tama Tonga, and Tanga Loa, the ENEVER Trip 6-man champions, with Ishimori, Tanga, and Loa, and the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tama Tonga and Tanga Loa, the firing squad. They defeated Bullet Club Elite, Chase Owens, Hangman Page, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson. 12 minutes and 6 seconds, and Chase Owens looked like the man of the match in this. He was outstanding, as per usual. But more Bullet Club versus Bullet Club shenanigans. A fun match, but with a serious edge to it. What were your thoughts, Marcus?
I dug it. I absolutely dug this. I mean, like, you know, we saw elevation from, you know, in the tag matches early on in these three bouts, man. But right here, a lot of animosity and stern energy going into this match on both sides. Obviously, you know, Bullet Club OGs have absolutely stripped, you know, the lead nosebulls of not only their titles, but a little bit of their dignity at times. You know, Hangman Page and Chase Owens did their thing. The Jacksons always do their thing, but Hangman Page and Owens really stood out, as per usual, like you said. And God bless Owens for taking that flapjack gun stunt. Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah. I mean, Chase Owens is just... I love Chase Owens.
Yeah. He's definitely going to be feeling that in the morning. But, yeah, I mean, it's just fun. I mean, you can't really... you know, hate on what's going on, but because this isn't just another one of those years where it's like, okay, who's getting kicked out now?
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole defection, and it's great because Tom was doing his thing and putting it on his back. Still very much riding that wave of, you know, here's the line, here's my foot waving over it, but not necessarily crossing it too much. he very much rides that wave like nobody else. So, yeah, this is fun. This is obviously going to go on for a while, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it elevates.
Yeah, we've got some other things to talk about later on in the show, but this was a precursor to what was going to happen there with Firing Squad versus the Elite. This is going to be the big money feud of spring.
Yeah.
Well, at least until January, and when we find out where people are going to fall out in the real world when it comes to contract signing and things like that.
Exactly.
Right then, next matchup was Chaos Hiroki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii, and Will Yum Ospreay. They defeated Suzuki Gun, Minoru Suzuki, Tai Chi, and Takeyashi Ayazuka, 12 minutes and 10 seconds. William Ospreay pins Tai Chi, the never open weight champion, and makes himself the number one contender for the open weight championship. As Rocky Romero quite rightly said, the active word is open weight, which means anyone can challenge for that title. And I've got to say, Will Ospreay versus Tai Chi sounds like an interesting and compelling matchup. And I might not actually be surprised if Tai Chi's title reign doesn't last that long, which I'd be very happy about.
Amen.
What did you think of this, Marcus?
Again, another great showing. Big fans of Ishii, Goto, and Ospreay, specifically Ospreay right now, because he's handing Tai Chi his ass. very much, you know, very much digging that. So yeah, it's another fun affair. Obviously, Suzuki Minoru is gonna do his thing, and Takeshi is just a wild, mad pit bull on the loose most times. But yeah, they pulled through in the Ospreay. You know, very much weighed his intentions known, and the exclamation point was a stormbreaker. So I dug that. So yeah, definitely looking forward to that match.
Yeah, definitely. It should be interesting to see two completely polar opposite approaches to pro wrestling, and it should refresh Will and give him something else to have a go at. And
shout out to Goto for giving Ospreay the endorsement. You know, obviously he's not he's dealing with his own stuff right now. So I think he's going to be tied up with Jeff Cobb.
Yeah,
I would imagine he would have a rematch, but maybe they get back to that later. But I appreciate that chaos love. And, you know, giving Ospreay an endorsement and not being a hater. Because, you know, I think Cody hogs all the hater rate on the shoulder.
Well, I think also it kind of reinforces the chaos storyline of we got rid of the problem. Now we can sort ourselves out.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about that.
We'll talk about the problem later.
The problem.
Yes.
That's the actual nickname should be, the problem.
The problem. The problem child. Anyway. The next matchup was very interesting. Kazuchika Okada, Sho, Toru Yano, and Yo lost in 9 minutes and 30 seconds to Los Ignorables de Japón, where there was the debut of the latest member of LIJ. Bushi, Sanada, and Tetsuya Naito came out and first of all suggested that Collection Milano AT was the new member of LIJ. Milano... denied that request, as much as everyone would love to see Milano as part of.
That was hilarious. They're like, what the hell? What y'all looking at me for? Nope. Get the spotlight off me, sir.
But no, Milano is going to stay retired. But the new member of LIJ to tag up with Bushi during the Junior Tag League is Shingo Takagi, formerly of Dragon Gate, the hottest free agent in Japanese pro wrestling up until last weekend. Now, I must admit, I have not seen much of Shingo, but, you know, I do know of his reputation. He's an outstanding wrestler. He's done some incredible work in Dragon Gate down the years. Now he gets to spread his wings on a bigger stage. Mind you, Dragon Gate's not exactly a small stage either. What did you think of this, Marcus, and what did you think of this match?
I thought this was phenomenal. I mean, I already said on a previous show once that I already very much like to get in touch with Naito's Taylor. but just that video package of L.I.J. in that casino type of thing, just the whole, those guys look like the coolest guys in New Japan. Very much somebody, you know, a faction you would want to hang out with. And I also appreciate the fact that, you know, while Hiromu was out, they very much always, you know, pay some homage to him and you know, always let it be known that he very much is still a staple in that faction. But they do have to evolve while he's gone. So I thought this was a perfect evolution of that. On top of the video and Shingo, you know, he looks great. I mean, it's rare that we do, you know, me and James do a show and, you know, we pretty much are on the same page when we don't know too much about one guy, because usually, you know, James is basically the New Japan encyclopedia for me. So, you know, this is a rare time, but, you know, I appreciate it that I'm kind of getting to know him through New Japan. I think it's going to be phenomenal. And that finisher of his is sick.
Yeah, definitely. So,
he looks great. I mean, he fits right in with Bushi and Sonata and Naito. So very much looking forward to, you know, seeing the evolution of this faction, specifically when Romu comes back. But, yeah, good stuff. But there's no way they was going to have him debut and take a L. So.
Now, Marcus, I've just sent you a JPEG, if you look in your text box on Skype. And if you just click that open, I want you to look at the guy in that suit and then think about Tetsuya Naito, and then I'll explain it. So would you do me that favor?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
And tell me what you think, and describe what you see for the listeners at home.
I see a guy that looks like an outlaw. Devil May Care attitude. And yeah, Naito's definitely felt like he held a gun to some people's head.
Yeah, there you go. You see, what Marcus has there is a picture from the film by Mr. Sam Peckinpah of Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. And the suit that the gentleman is wearing, he wears through the entire movie. And it's a very nice, slick lounge suit at the beginning of the movie. And after 3 days on the road, he doesn't get to change the suit. And it looks like that at the end of the movie. But it just struck me as the white suit with the big lapels and the black belt. That was Tetsuya Naito. And obviously it matches in with the Tranquilio kind of deal. You know,
yeah.
If you've ever seen the film Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, it is a weird and strange and wonderful film, because Simon Peckinpah was a weird and strange and wonderful man.
Yes.
Who did a lot of cocaine.
Talk about that, pulls you in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did a lot of cocaine in his time. So I would suggest you check out that movie, and it puts Tetsuya Naito in a whole new light. I'm not suggesting Tetsuya Naito does to go to cocaine. Clearly he doesn't. But Sam Peckinpah certainly did. And it influenced his filmmaking in crazy and wonderful ways. And that was just something that just struck me as like, I know where he got that suit idea from. There you go. But anyway, that's that. But yeah, Shingo Takagi made an awesome debut, got the pinfall win. I think it was over a year, wasn't it? Really well done this match. And, you know, it's a big debut. They beat Chaos. They beat the biggest names in Chaos as well, in Okada and Yano and Yo and Sho. So well done them.
Great stuff.
Now, I'm just thinking, we've got on the cage match listing, we're actually missing a match because it's a match that didn't happen. Should we talk about that one now?
Yeah, a lot happened and a lot didn't.
Okay, so there was due to be a special singles match, as they say, on this card, featuring Zack Sabre Jr. against Evil to round out their mini feud that's been going on, well, I guess since the end of the G1. And, you know, we did say about winner gets Chris Jericho. Now, as Evil came down to ringside, he had some druids with him. And in typical Jericho style, one of them happened to have a ponytail and arm tattoos. And he came and destroyed Evil. And it was indeed Chris Jericho, surprisingly enough. Actually looked like your Aunt Brenda after she'd been at the gin. But, yeah, it was an interesting way of going about things. And it caused a no contest, which Zach was happy about in the usual Suzuki Gun style, and he beat a bunch of people up.
Yeah, I definitely feel like Jericho's career in 2018 basically will be summed up in a compilation of him unmasking himself.
I can't
and
come. I'm not there. And then he turns
exactly.
up. It's becoming predictable now. When he does, he's going to be there. We're going to be like, yeah, of course you're not. So, yeah, it sets up Evil versus Jericho. I'm assuming that will go on at Power Struggle. But it kind of leaves Zack Sabre Jr. in the lurch, who will still want revenge against Evil anyway. So I wonder where we're going with this. What were your thoughts on this particular angle, sir? Because it did look very WWE, this angle. Not as New Japan as one would like, perhaps.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I thought it was funny, because I've never seen Evil do that entrance.
Yeah.
So when it initially happened, I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is interesting. I mean, obviously, he has, a lot riding and going to beat Zach, but normally you save an entrance like that for, maybe a Wrestle Kingdom, not knocking anything from this show, because I thought this was an overall phenomenal show.
To be fair to New Japan, they kind of like bill this as the autumn Wrestle Kingdom. This one, Dominion and Wrestle Kingdom, are their three biggest shows of the year, so it's kind of their equivalent to the Royal Rumble, I guess, in like stature.
Which will explain why they're my three favorite shows this year.
Yeah, there you go, you see.
it all comes full circle, but yeah, God bless Evil, man. You basically got his ass kicked for coming to the aid of his friend. And good old Grandpa Jericho never forgets.
No, he does not.
So he took a beating, and of course Zack Sabre Jr. just sat back and watched in all his cocky flair and very much wanted to finish the match. Or start the match, I should say. It was crazy. And again, because Naito came and made the save, didn't he?
Yes, he did, yeah. He did. He saved Evil from Zack, yeah.
And again, and this is normally my criticism of LIJ. A lot of times somebody will be getting jumped and you just feel like, I know one of them's back there. Like, I know somebody's back there. Like that was that one time, because when Naito initially got jumped by Jericho, they just had a group match. The group left him in the ring. And I'm like, is nobody hearing the crowd right now? He left him jumped for like 15 minutes. But poor Evil, man. Everything is awful for Evil right now. So, you got Jericho to deal with. He's title is not, with Sonata right now. And, death, taxes, Skrull beats Ospreay and Sabre beats Evil.
Yeah.
Right now. That's how I was looking. So, hopefully he can bounce back. But like you said, it does leave Zack Sabre Jr. in the lurch a little bit. But I think that's perfectly fine with him, because in his mind, he's already beaten half the roster anyway.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where things lay out for him in the next 12 months. But I think he can crack the upper echelon next year. I think he can be the Omega level star if they can figure out a way to get him to that point. I don't think they've fully seen the potential, and they've used him incredibly well this year, but I don't think we've seen the last of Zack Sabre Jr. I think he's going to be a main event mainstay for a long while to come yet. Right then, we'll move on to the three big hitters of this particular night. We had the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title final match between Kushida and Marty Scurll, 18 minutes and 33 seconds. Kushida picks up, I think it's his sixth IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, puts him third on the all-time list, and it was a really, really, really good match. If anything, it was a little bit too 50-50 for my taste, because the counters were happening that fast, they were barely happening at all. So it was kind of like it wasn't as in deep as it could have been, but it was still exceptionally good. I don't mean to knock on anything that anyone did in this match. I thought it was really, really good. Perhaps not as good as the Will Ospreay-Marty Scurll match in the semi-final, but certainly one of the best junior heavyweight matches of this year. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, everything you said, man. I thoroughly enjoyed this match. Everybody knows I'm a Kushida guy and Scurll as well. So I also appreciate the fact that they didn't have it be Kushida or Scurll Ospreay again.
Yeah.
Or something like that. We got to obviously we've seen these two lock up before, but and credit to Kevin Kelly, always doing great on commentary to bring. Even the first time viewer in on all the backstory and everything, because apparently Scurll has yet to beat Kushida.
Mm.
So, that's a great thing and kind of offsets a contrast in what he has going on with Ospreay. So, it was a phenomenal match, great stuff. Like you said, I don't think it can necessarily measure up to what we got from screwed an Ospreay, and then I think that was the semifinal when Ospreay damn near broke his neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean that just had so much going into that match. But never to take away anything from this match because this was phenomenal. And of course, Kushida, you know, gets the win, score, put up a hell of a fight. But Kushida, man, he's the ace. They call him the ace of the Super Juniors. He really is like the Tanahashi of the Super Juniors. No matter what happens, you know, he can take a bunch of L's, you know, at a time every year. But you just never get tired like Tanahashi of seeing this guy make a comeback.
No, that's it.
Because you know he can get it done. And it's just, yeah, you know, he holds that title proud. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who comes up against him now on his sixth reign.
It's his best. Like, he's at his best in the pure underdog moment. And this was kind of like you've got Skrull on a roll. He isn't a complete pure underdog. Bushi run him really close. So, yeah, it was good. It was really good. Just solid wrestling and the kind of match you need to kind of reestablish Kushida as the ace in the company. Obviously, they were kind of going with Hiromu as the ace for a little bit there, but obviously Hiromu's kind of otherwise occupied. So, whilst he's recovering, it was the right decision to make, I think. I mean, you could have given it to Skrull, but he's already had the championship once in the last 12 months.
And it
puts new wheels on things because you can go back to Bushi, you can go back to Mighty Skrull, you can go back to Will Ospreay. Obviously, Ospreay's now tied up somewhere else. So it kind of freshened things up just by going back to Kushida in the first place.
Exactly. I mean, and talk about, again, New Japan potentially bringing everything full circle. Not just because Kushida setting the record, and Skrull definitely have his day. He's one of the best going. But to have that phenomenal feud going back to last year's Dominion, and you talk about somebody, you know, couldn't catch a break. Kushida just couldn't, you know, get over on Takahashi. And for him to be able to come back like he did, reinvent himself, finally beat him. And then, you know, we tell the story of Hiromu's rise, you know, back to the title. And then, you know, for him to unfortunately go out the way he did. And now him pretending to come back. And the guy who has his title is Kushida again. that's just great storytelling. It's almost Takahashi Okada-ish. So
yeah, definitely. It's on that level, certainly. All right, then. The next match was perhaps the biggest match of the night, with all due respect to the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. This was the number one contenders match for Wrestle Kingdom. Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Jay White. Jay had beaten Hiroshi during the G1 climax. He was deserving of this shot. But the match wasn't the whole story. The match was great. This is Jay White as a superstar, and he looked like a superstar through this whole match. Tanahashi was the underdog going in, really, you know, and he certainly acted like one. It took him a long while to get his motor running. When he did, he managed to override Jay White, but he took a hell of a beating in the process. And then we get to the ending, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the match first, Marcus, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, great match. I mean, you know, Jay, well, again, we talked about Jay White when he first came to New Japan and how, you know, very much felt like he was finding his wheels. He's there now. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, he's found it now. He's clicking. The knife pervert is in full gear. Is in full gear. And obviously, again, the ultimate comeback kid, Tanahashi, you know, getting back into the upper echelon ranks. And just this really being about, you know, the old guard and new guard, and about where the direction of the company we want to go. I mean, Jay White's whole thing is they don't want to see, you know, two guys in the main event. And, you know, Tanahashi is just like, that main event is me. Like, there is no main event without me. You don't do that main event if I'm not in it. So that whole deal. But, yeah, I mean, this basically was a handicap match, to be honest with you. It was a phenomenal handicap match. Ghetto. It's hilarious. And he was his selling was on a Flair-esque style in this match, and I loved it. Like, he's getting hit and absolutely allow his whole body to go limp.
Yeah.
Great stuff, just great stuff. And, you know, Jay White, I mean, he threw everything at Tanahashi, including the kitchen sink. And Tanahashi just came back, and I loved the way, you know, it just got down to the point Tanahashi was like, F it, and low-blowed him. And did his thing. And, he pulled the Cody on him, man. He got him, you know. And again, that just telling you that, again, showing how far Jay White is coming. Those weren't fluke wins in the G1.
No.
I mean, obviously, they, you know, they were partially tainted because he kind of, obviously, he had some, help.
Yeah,
he had some help in that regard. But, you know, he get the job done on his own, and just to show, because he was absolutely irate, because he popped up right after the thing, and then, obviously, you know, that goes into where we finna go now.
Yeah, so we get to the end of the match, and Jay is not happy. Ghetto is not happy. They decide to beat down on Tanahashi, as you would do, because they are the big bad heels now. And out to make the save for Hiroshi Tanahashi is Kazuchika Okada. And the roof blew off the building.
I had to take my glasses off, make sure these were my new ones.
Yeah, you what? Beg your pardon? Sorry? Yes, the leader of Chaos came to save Hiroshi Tanahashi. More to attack Jay White than save Hiroshi Tanahashi, but he was certainly saving Hiroshi Tanahashi. But then the balance of the equation flipped again. The Bullet Club OGs came down to ringside. Well, no, before that, Jado came down to ringside and tried to make peacemaker between Jay White and Ghetto. And then the Bullet Club OGs came down to ringside. They held up Jay White and Ghetto for Kazuchika Okada to attack him. And he was kind of undecided about what to do. Took a swing, but the OGs deployed him to the floor. And it apparently seems like the world-class tag team Ghetto and Jado are now Bullet Club OG. But was that the plan all along? Because obviously Jay White is a protege of one Bad Luck Fale back in the day. So that's the story we're going with at the minute. This has been planned from day one of Jay White coming back from Excursion. That's an interesting storyline, and it shows you how far they plan these things in advance. What did you think of this, Marcus? What do you think of this turn, and where does it leave Kazuchika Okada, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Jay White?
I mean, obviously Jay White, you know, stock just went up. You know, yeah. You put one of the, you know, ultimate troublemakers on the show with the ultimate faction of troublemakers. And, you know, a lot of people just finna catch hell on the show. But, I mean, another thing that was kind of disturbing to me, and I don't think a lot of people talked about or picked up on it, and obviously a lot of it had to do with because of how the move had to be set up, because it literally had to, like, you had to get caught with the gun stun.
Yeah.
But he was legitimately finna do it.
Yeah.
Like, like, finna do it. I was like, wait a minute. Like, is anybody kind of missing the point? Like, he was actually just finna do it. So, yeah, but shout out to the brothers, Gato and Gato. I mean, they literally, the guys essentially running the company are with the faction that is trying to take over the company now. So, I mean, it's all the balls are in the Bullet Club OG's court right now.
They are. And I tell you what, it does remind me of the early days of Bullet Club with Finn Balor and, Prince Devitt as he was then, and Carl Anderson, and the way they acted and reacted. And that's kind of the way, you know, Tama Tonga has been trying to be Carl Anderson. It will not be Carl Anderson, but in that mold of the enforcer of the OGs since the turn, kind of really since last G1. But he hasn't had the foil. He hasn't had the other person in place, because without Prince Devitt, Carl Anderson isn't as effective. And without Carl Anderson, Prince Devitt isn't as effective. But now he has Jay White. He has that foil to really push. And he can concentrate on being the enforcer of the OGs and let Jay go after the glory. But he is the one that's keeping the ship together the way Carl Anderson did in the early days of Bullet Club. That's a much better balance. And all these kids, when I say kids, you know, Tama Tonga was 36 this week, but all these kids in Bullet Club OG who are now mature seasoned veterans and see where everything's going to lay out can put things together the way they used to do, and it suddenly becomes a lot more effective. And all that subliminal storytelling that New Japan do has kind of fed into this storyline, and that's why I think I enjoy it so much and why I'm such a big fan of the OGs, because they're not doing anything different. They've done what they've always done. That's what Bullet Club's supposed to be about, and it's nice to see it back. I kind of missed it, to be honest with you. You don't know what you've got till it's not there.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't argue their stance. I mean, you don't have to agree at all. And we talked about extensively during the GIG1 coverage, the way they was going about, you know, making their points, as it was single-handedly damn near ruining our tournament.
Yeah.
But you can't argue their points. They set back, and you, like you said, they're getting back to the original template, because the interchanging of adding new members here and there, some guys that absolutely didn't fit at all in Bullet Club, Adam Cole. But yeah, this didn't fit at all, and it diluted it in a way, and it ran down me, even, you know, and it got real predictable. It's like, okay, this is the time of year who's getting kicked out. Like, literally, they're gonna get super kicked out of the club. So now that Tama Tonga's getting back to basics, and he's not hurting, I mean, it doesn't hurt him at all to, you know, put somebody who is, you know, kind of hogs the spotlight a little bit in Jay White, because he's got, I mean, he's a never open weight six man and the heavyweight tag.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not hurting him at all. And he's one of the most vocal guys in the company, both on screen and on Twitter. Please follow Tama Tonga on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, you should do.
Yeah, the guy's hilarious. And then on the other side, like you said, never in a million years would have thought, you know, we got Okada coming today to Tanahashi. And then kind of in like a week later, we got freaking Phoenix and Lucha Underground teaming with Mia Mortez. Like, what is like, you got to love wrestling. It's just phenomenal. And, you know, the whole thing with Okada and Tanahashi is, you know, kind of taking a stance of like, what the hell have you been doing? Like, you were like, okay, my ultimate rival. And then obviously you dropped the strap, and now what you doing, playing with balloons and literally letting the wolf in the hen house?
Yeah.
And then you just, you're not seeing, like, you're falling off here. Like, I'm getting back to glory, and you kind of just wallowing in, you know, stagnation. So I think him kind of getting inside with Tanahashi in this way can kind of get him back on this square. Because obviously Gato was like, look, dude, I'm betting on this horse.
Yeah.
Because he's off to the races right now. So you get back to me when you get back on track.
Yeah,
I really dig it.
I mean, I did talk about it the other week, and my kind of like my thought process, I think it was with Christy. Was it with you? I'm not sure. Was it you? It was either you or Christy. I can't remember. Saying about, like, I kind of would like to see Hiroshi Tanahashi join Chaos, because I think it would be the right move as kind of like just to kind of like, you know, lead the Kings of Strong Style back to the promised land. I thought that would be an interesting kind of story you could tell. And I kind of got it a little bit here. Just a little bit. Just enough to want more.
Yeah, yeah. And I can see that, you know, Tanahashi maybe doing it part-time because, you know, he's the ace. He gets it done on his own. He doesn't need or want any help. But, you know, when you look at guys like, and I think we kind of mentioned it before on a previous show, like guys like Yoshihashi.
Yeah.
And obviously Okada and just certain guys you could see Tanahashi kind of want to take under his wing. You know, that could really be great for them because Jay White has left the stable in a bit of a muck. I mean, you know, they have no straps. You know, they got to get their fluidity back. And like I said, all the balls in the Bullet Club OG's thing. Okada kind of has to kind of take the reins back and, you know, get everything together. But I think it might take just being there with that Tanahashi energy to get him back on track.
That would kind of like make things full circle for me. It'd be like, you know, my friend left you in charge and look what you've done. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the last action of Shinsuke Nakamura as a New Japan Pro wrestler was slapping Tanahashi on the back because he had the title shot against Kenny Omega. You know? And that for me, all that stuff, all that story between me and him built this company to where it is today. We left you in charge and now look what's happened. You know, that's the kind of thing that I'm thinking of, and I think it would work really, really well. I don't think it will happen like as directly as Tanahashi joining Chaos, but the fact that Chaos could watch Tanahashi's back would be an interesting way of going about it.
Yeah, it's like, well, Okada, man, you got to put them damn balloons down and put that Rainmaker coat back on and get to work, man.
Yeah, you're not here. We're not here to help you. We're helping us, but we will help you because it helps us. Anywho, we'll see. The next match was the IWGP Heavyweight 3-Way match between Kenny Omega, Kota, and Kota Ibushi. 34 minutes and 13 seconds. I have to admit, didn't like this at all.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, just no. 3-Way matches shouldn't be allowed. It's the New Japan IWGP Heavyweight Championship. It just absolutely no interest. None whatsoever. I watched it, and I don't mean to dissuade any of the athletic stuff that went on in the match, but it was just too much all in one go, and I don't like it. I hate 3-way matches anyway, and this was one of those occasions where it just did not click with me in any way, shape, or form. It was all right. It did what it was supposed to do, but now I'm glad it's over. We can get onto something decent. So that's my kind of take on it. What were your thoughts on it, Marcus? Please be positive, because I hate finishing a show being negative. I hate being negative anyway, but this was
I love that you're furious when it comes to this stuff. I mean, you know, gotta love it. I mean, that title is prestigious for a reason. A lot of it has to do with the one-on-one confrontation. So, I dug it. This is probably one of my favorite Cody performances this year because it didn't really allow him that time to be as methodically paced as he normally is during a match.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I think a lot of times he gets critiqued for, and he really seemed like he was on top of his game. He knew that, you know, he could kind of manipulate the situation, play up with the friendship and the, but very much sliding through the cracks when they were there. Like, I think there's no better, I guess, image to describe Cody as a person or as the character than him setting up a double suplex with Kenny Omega and then turning it into a schoolboy. Like, just leave it to Cody to always put himself in position, possible alignment with somebody, but always remaining in position, whether he's ahead or behind somebody, to get a win. That's Cody in a nutshell. And then you had the played up back and forth between Kenny and Kota. Very much didn't hold back against Kota, but there was one moment early in the match when he they were going back and forth on pins on Cody. And Kenny kind of just was like, okay, go ahead and take the pin. You're not going to get it, but here's a bone. Like, he literally, it was like, here's a bone for you. But yeah, like you said, I definitely appreciated all the athleticism. Just some absolutely great spots in this match. And I dig it. But again, like you said, I think the story here, because Cody literally interjected himself into this match.
Yeah.
And Kenny took it in a boost. Like, what the hell, man? Oh, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
I can see why it had to be done, because they are the three guys. But it elevates Cody when he doesn't need to be elevated. It kind of, there's just too much stuff going on. I think, you know, the guys in New Japan get a lot of freedom when it comes to telling their stories, and I think that a lot of the time it's very, very good. Like, everything the books do tends to be pretty great. But again, this has become, from a storyline point of view, it just kind of proves Tama Tonga's point. It's all about them, and they don't care about anybody else. So why should we be fans of theirs? You know, they're the baby faces in this situation. You know, we get to the end of the night, and there's Marty Scurll, and where's Chase Owens, and where's Yujiro? And, you know, all right, Kenny does say, I love all of the people in Bullet Club, but the visual presentation isn't there. You know, and Tama's right, you know, again and again and again. And it's like, eventually you pull the trigger on Tama being right enough, Kenny ain't going to be that big baby face anymore. And it kind of just chips away. I like that he's not perfect. That's the way it's supposed to be. But equally, it is just like, this isn't... I want something simpler. I love the story that has been told with the Golden Lovers, but this just seemed like something we didn't need.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, you split the Bullet Club down the middle, and you see both sides now, and it's kind of like that old adage, you know, if you throw a pebble in the river, and even if it goes back to form, that river's now forever changed.
Yeah,
and we've seen that happen in the Bullet Club, and you know, like you said, it's Tom really just trying to get back to basics and stuff that works, and just, you know, he's really just spitting gospel right now, because it is bringing in guys like Omega, who's grown an ego. Guys like Cody, who came in with an ego, and then them clashing, and then them being back to friends, and just that topsy-turvy stuff. And a lot of times with guys even like the Bucks, let alone guys like Owens and Hangman and others, getting left behind in the spotlight, it's not really leveled out the way it should have. So the scales aren't really balanced on that side, whereas, you know, the OGs is perfectly in balance right now, it seems. Everything's clicking, so, you know. But, you know, Fish Ross at the head, and Kenny's the head right now, so,
They've got somebody for every division. They've got somebody for the never open weight, that's Farley. They've got somebody for the heavyweight division, that's Jay. They've got a tag team, a heavyweight tag team. They have a junior tag team now. That's all they need. Robbie Eagles, Antonio Giacchimori, nice, close-knit, tight group to do the job with.
Yep.
And you don't need any more than that. And then, you know, the Elite is now a close-knit, tight group, but we don't see all of them all together at the same time, all the time. And it is just like, it's not fair. And they're supposed to be the big baby faces, and that's the bit that kind of worries me in the long run. I'm not saying they aren't. Obviously, they are. They shift merch like there's no tomorrow. However, it is getting to the point where things are getting a little too complicated for my taste, and this match is kind of that, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't help with the real life what's going to happen type of deal. You don't have that on the OG side.
No, so we'll see what happens anyway. That's the key thing. I mean, we've got Power Struggle next. There is a possibility this is the last month we will see the Elite as we know them today all in New Japan Pro Wrestling at the same time. And what if they all move at the same time? You know, are they taking Hangman with them? Is Hangman staying put? Is Chase going to leave with them? Yujiro isn't going anywhere, obviously. So it's just like, we'll have to see what happens. But it just, I want more from them but less, if that makes sense. I want the story that they've been telling just in smaller portions so I can absorb it a bit better.
Yeah.
That's I think what I mean. This was just too much of everything all at once for my storytelling taste. Though the match was perfectly fine as far as like actual execution is concerned, but it suffered from the standard three-way kind of match thing, which I don't like, which is someone gets thrown to the outside and we have 2 minutes of spots, then someone gets thrown to the outside and we have 2 minutes of spots, and it's like, eh, just not interested. Just not my thing. But there you go. If it was all my thing, then not everyone would watch it, would they? It'd be me. So that's the way it goes. Anywho, it is Bound for Glory weekend. Are you having a special Christmas at your house, Marcus?
In a way. I'm hoping it turns out to be a special Christmas. I mean, Bound for Glory really does need to get back on pace to be the top show of the company. And coming off of Slammiversary and shaping up, looking at the card and everything that's going into it, you know, it's shaping up to be that way. Hopefully, you know, they knock it out of the park even more so than Slammiversary. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fun one.
There's some big matches happened on TV this week. I think, is it Chelsea Green versus Pentagon was pretty damn good on Lucha Underground this week. I've not seen it, but that was good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that coming off of last week's Marty the Moth versus his sister Mariposa. I mean, they've been, you know, they've had some really good intergender matches.
Some intergender classics going on in Lucha Underground this year.
Yeah, and I dig it. I mean, and again, what that is today, you know, company continues to solidify having one of the most legit Hall of Fames by having Abyss be inducted. So, you know.
Indeed, definitely. Abyss in the Hall of Fame is big news, and congratulations to him. You know, he's a cool dude and does a lot of backstage work that we never find out about because he does a lot of production work for Impact Wrestling and has done down the years. So, he's a good guy and possibly the most famous sports administrator ever.
Yeah, you talk about loyalty with that company, he's one of the first names that comes up.
Yes, he is indeed. Right then, we're going to have to wrap our show for today, but that was King of Pro Wrestling. An outstanding card overall. Strength and depth in this card, but lots of new storylines and lots of new twists. So we hope you go see it on New Japan World. I'd like to thank my guest for today, Mr. Marcus Green. Thank you for your time, sir.
Oh, man, thank you for having me. Always a trip.
And I would also like to thank you for listening. You can find us at Troopany Show. You can find Marcus at Paradox Kid. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star, all on Twitter. And you can find the show at The Troopany Show on Facebook there. You can also find us on Patreon. We're going to come up with a new Patreon plan in the next couple of weeks. So if you want to put some input into the show and pick a subject for us to look at, you'll be able to do that with a Patreon payment. We're going to get to that. We've got some changes afoot coming on the Troopany Show. We will not say too much. We're planning on some new things and trying to get some things moving for the new year to give you more and better wrestling coverage of every wrestling company we can. Take care, speak soon, and have a good week. Bye.